Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning to Ukraine, where Russia launched major waves of missile and drone attacks overnight, with officials reporting that at least four people were killed. Ukrainian air defence forces are warning that the entire country is now under the threat of a ballistic weapons attack. In a moment, we'll speak to Hamish de Breton Gordon, who's a former British Army officer and NATO commander. First, though, I'm joined by Roland Oliphant, who is senior foreign correspondent with The Telegraph. Roland, good morning to you and thank you for joining us this morning. So we have high alert right across Ukraine. Several regions were attacked, we know, last night, and this is all following on from what was described yesterday as the worst air attack of the war overnight into yesterday morning. So are we seeing a retaliation for the Ukrainian incursion into Russian territory a number of weeks ago, or is this a ramping up as we head into the autumn?
I mean, it might be both. I mean, given the scale of this attack, as you say, like the night before last, certainly the biggest in terms of the number of missiles and drones used since the start of the war. So, you know, Russia dropping probably several months worth of missile production in one night there. Given the timing, yes, maybe that is meant to be a response to Kursk, a kind of retaliation. But you definitely also have to put that in the context of a long-running campaign to hit and degrade Ukraine's civilian energy infrastructure and other infrastructure ahead of winter. This has been going on and building up all through the summer and even before that. It's a clear objective of the Russians. And we are now, I mean, what is it? We're almost in September, right? Winter is not that far off. So perhaps, you know, the timing of this particular strike is meant to be linked to Kursk, but it's definitely also in the bigger context part of a long-running and much broader strategy of making this winter incredibly difficult for Ukraine.
So you mentioned the targeting of civilian infrastructure, of energy infrastructure, but in the attacks last night, a hotel was hit, and we know that two people died in that particular attack and someone else is missing in the aftermath. Is there an explanation around why they might be targeting hotels now?
I mean, they do this from time to time. They go through these spates of deliberately targeting, I'd call it hospitality infrastructure, so kind of hotels, restaurants, places where, you know, journalists, aid workers, other foreigners might hang out. They generally try and justify it by saying something like foreign mercenaries were staying there. That's generally not true. I mean, this is the second hotel struck in 2 days or 3 days. A couple of nights before that, they hit the Sapphire Hotel in Kramatorsk, where a Reuters crew was staying. They killed Ryan Evans, the security advisor. Two other Reuters journalists are in hospital, quite badly injured because of that. I happen to know that particular hotel did not host soldiers. The management made a point of it because they didn't want to become a target. So, and the other hotel that was hit last night, I've stayed there as well. I didn't see any soldiers there when I was staying there a while ago. I think it's a deliberate, systematic, targeted campaign because the hotels are things, okay, journalists stay there and maybe they are sending messages to journalists, but it's also the kind of essential bits of infrastructure for anybody kind of moving around the country, right? It's part of the general infrastructure of a modern country, and you take out those things, and in a way, it will degrade the ability of Ukraine to function as a normal economy and a normal country. Just as hitting other key elements of the economy and infrastructure would do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's happening on the ground now, because these are air attacks that we've been discussing thus far, and this grinding ground war is continuing. Is it fair to characterise it as Ukraine making small gains in one area and Russia doing the same in another?
Yes, that's pretty much what's going on. But this is it's actually a really high-risk moment at the moment, I think. The Ukrainians obviously launched this surprise attack into Kursk about 3 weeks ago now, made rapid progress at the time, obviously put the Russians on the back foot, very embarrassing. But the Russians, one of the objectives of that seems to have been to draw the Russian reserves away from the Donbass region, where they've been making most of their progress. The Russians don't seem to have done that, and they are making much much better progress actually there in the past few weeks, probably because the Ukrainians have pulled units from that area to take part in the Kursk operation. So you have got the Ukrainians, you know, changing the dynamic of the war, taking ground inside Russia rather than Russia taking ground inside Ukraine. Really important moment. We've got reports today just started to come through that maybe the Ukrainians have launched another attack on another part of the border, maybe trying to break through there. So that whole story is not over. And yet, nonetheless, the Russians are getting much, much closer to the strategic city of Pokrovsk in Donbass. And it doesn't look like they're going to stop at this moment. So a real high stakes kind of situation at the front.
All right, Roland, thank you very much. Roland Oliphant there from The Telegraph. And let's talk more about the high stakes now with Hamish de Breton Gordon, former British Army officer and NATO commander. And Hamish, thanks for being with us this morning. Do you see this as being a significant escalation and an important moment in this war?
Well, good morning. Yes, I certainly think it is. The Kursk manoeuvre, invasion, whatever we're calling it now, has turned into a significant black swan event for the Russians. You know, they've got 300,000 or so refugees heading east, questioning Putin's strategic military brilliance. And the other way, as Roland's just sort of said, we've got a lot of Russian conscripts, barely trained, being thrown into the area. And it looks like the Russians might have another area to look at too. So it is an escalation. And I spent many years in Syria, which we discussed in the past, where the Russians with the Syrians attack civilian infrastructure as a way to prevail. And of course, they did prevail. Assad is still in power. The Russians still hold power in Syria, and they are using that sort of playbook, if you like, because there's very little else that they can do in escalation. There's a lot of fear in Europe that they might go nuclear or chemical weapons or whatever, but that has not happened because it can't. But by absolutely trying to hammer the civilian infrastructure in Ukraine, Putin seems to think that might be a way to him to prevail. And it's very important, as we did not support the Syrian people for 10 years in Syria, we must absolutely do that, support the Ukrainians to hold back here and prevail so that they can get a peace and ceasefire on their terms.
And on that, we heard President Zelensky again asking for permission from allies, from Britain and from the United States and others, to allow him to use long-range weapons to target Russian ammunition stores and airfields and planes deep inside Russia. Given what we've seen overnight and overnight on Sunday night, is that position, the allies' position, likely to change, Hamish?
Well, I don't know if it's likely to change, but absolutely it must do. So from a UK perspective, the Storm Shadow missile, this is exactly the missile that the Ukrainians need to target those airfields that are launching all these attacks from. And actually, I would go further, and I'm writing about it in the Telegraph today, that we should consider using NATO air defence and fighters to take down these missiles that are fired at civilian targets, hotels and hospitals and schools in Ukraine. Let's face it, ourselves and the Americans and the French did exactly the same when Iranian drones and missiles being fired at Israel, and did it from international airspace. Although I'm just a tank commander, from my understanding of spending 30-odd years on the battlefields of the world, this would be possible with NATO jets, not in Russian airspace, taking down these missiles and drones that are fired at civilian targets in Ukraine. And if we, you know, that if we're not prepared to do that, at least we must allow our long-range missiles to do this. Otherwise, Russia is going to prevail as it did in Syria, and we'll face, you know, more turmoil in Europe for years to come.
It's a difficult choice to make, though, isn't it? Because where does that leave this war then, once NATO is drawn in?
Well, you're absolutely right, and you're right for our leaders to be cautious. But and lots of people are concerned that whoever comes next from Putin will be worse. But to go back to my point, Putin is rattled. But Putin has destroyed the Russian army, the Russian navy, and the Russian air force. So whatever comes next will be no threat to the West for years to come. And Putin and his lieutenants sort of know that. NATO is far more powerful militarily. We don't want to get involved in a direct conflict with Russia. Absolutely not. But we must enable Ukraine to prevail, hold the land that they've got. And, you know, everybody wants peace, and get to a negotiation table where Ukraine can, you know, come out with a decent future. And with the land that it holds at the moment is roughly the land Russia has taken. And whatever hot air is coming out of the Kremlin at the moment, you know, the West, I'm sure, if we're absolutely united behind Ukraine, can force this peace. And, we can get back to a vague sort of normality in the next year or so without having to prolong this fight for years and years and years.
Hamish, you mentioned earlier that Vladimir Putin is rattled. How are you seeing that? How is that manifesting in your view?
Well, I think the main thing that we're seeing is on the daily news programs that are usually full of Russian bravado on, you know, how they are defeating the dreadful West. You know, in the last few weeks, or really since the Kursk incursion, you know, some of these people are questioning Putin's prowess, his military prowess, questioning, you know, the capabilities of the Russian army, and, you know, and demanding things change. I mean, they've always demanded that the Russian government drop nuclear weapons on Ukraine and Britain in particular. There is a fixation with Britain, which is rather strange. But I think that and the fact that people in Russia are now understanding what's happening, these 300,000 refugees are now getting in the public. And I think the other thing that is turning is that Russian army is in such a perilous state that the middle classes, the kids of the middle classes in St. Petersburg and Kremlin, are now realizing that they have to go into fight at the front. And that hasn't happened before. And there are signs that people are really getting to understand what's happened, which hitherto programs like yours and the Telegraph and other news agencies are not heard in Russia. But they are getting the facts now, and that is beginning to change opinion, I think.
All right. Well, whatever happens in the longer term, it looks as though the people of Ukraine have a very difficult couple of months ahead, winter months coming. Hamish, thank you very much for your time once again. That's Hamish de Breton Gordon. And earlier we heard from Roland Oliphant. Now, it seems the much talked about residential zoned land tax could be in the budget after all. More from Harry McGee next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.